Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. A wise man once said there's no such thing as winning a fight with the boss. But what happens when the boss represents one of the most trusted news brands in American history? Enter the story of Scott Pelley and 60 Minutes. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
Tensions are growing under new management at CBS News. Last week, CBS fired 60 Minutes executive producer Tanya Simon and correspondent Sharon Alfonsi and Cecilia Vega. At a meeting to start the week, a longtime anchor spoke up.
I'm Scott Pelley.
According to a detailed report on the Status website, Pelley said CBS News head Barry Weiss is murdering the show and accused Simon's replacement as executive producer Nick Bilton of having slender qualifications for the job. The report says Weiss was not at the meeting. Bilton insisted Weiss does love CBS News and 60 Minutes. Pelley countered by saying she was brought in to kill it, and she's doing exactly that. A person close to CBS leadership tells the AP it's disappointing Pelley's accusations were being aired publicly, despite efforts to engage with him privately.
And then the other shoe dropped. Here's more on the drama at Venerable 60 Minutes from Adam and Jordana.
CBS never should have fired Scott Pelley.
Even though he was petulant, and as you said, in that meeting yesterday?
Acting like a petulant child in a meeting is not cause for firing, especially, and sometimes it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
sometimes
if you're a low-level employee.
Not when you're Scott Pelley.
Not when you're Scott Pelley.
Okay, it's different because he has name recognition and power, and he's a celebrity, and he has earned the trust of Americans over the 37 years that he has worked at CBS News. And you can have differences with management. You cannot like the way the station is going. You know, you can disagree all you want, and you get to voice your complaints. But here's why he should not have been fired, because it makes CBS look bad. Now we believe him.
Yeah.
We believe that they're trying to kill 60 Minutes. We believe that if you disagree or you stand up or you say the truth, that you get knocked down.
Yeah.
CBS, maybe they were right, and Scott Pelley wasn't a petulant child, and he just doesn't like new management, so he's complaining. But the fact that you then fired him makes it look like everything he said was true.
That's true.
And it makes CBS look bad. Mm-hmm. It kind of puts a chink in the armor of 60 Minutes' credibility and CBS's credibility and the management's credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why they shouldn't have done it. They should have kept him so they could have somebody that is pushing against the boundaries of what they want to create.
Right.
They should have a dissenting voice in the room.
Absolutely.
Now it looks like they only want people who agree with them. And whether that's true or not, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes at CBS News, but it looks bad, and they never should have fired him.
Well, I hope he tells us what's going on behind the scenes.
Oh my God.
And I hope Celia Vega and Sharon Alfonsi, and we've had former executive producers come out and say that the direction is something that they don't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Pelley, we'll get to it. He issued a statement today.
It is damning.
It is absolutely damning. But like you said, and by the way, I'll just say this, I believe him 100%. Because and you're right, we absolutely want to hear it. And if you make statements like he is stating that...
But let's tell you what he said.
Yeah.
Well, for those who haven't seen Scott Pelley's statement on his firing, it's quite long. Should I read the whole thing? Or
I would just go to the highlighted part.
Here we go. The highlighted part says this. For my part, new management has instructed me to inject falsehoods and bias into a politically sensitive story. I have been told to include assertions that are unverified. To date, every case I have managed to ignore these instructions or refuse them. Recently, politicians have been invited to choose correspondents for interviews on the broadcast. Giving politicians control over 60 Minutes interviews is not how this is done. Wow. Scott Pelley, if it's true that management has instructed you to inject falsehoods and bias into politically sensitive stories, We must immediately see the receipts of that. I right now want to read the emails where Barry Weiss or whoever the was executive producing 60 Minutes said, you must include this in your story. And that was an unverified account.
Yeah.
I need to see the receipts.
Right.
These are damning accusations.
Right.
And if they are true, then yes, CBS has lost its way.
Yeah.
But these are really serious accusations that actually hurt my heart to think that somebody would ask somebody to inject a falsehood into what he calls a politically sensitive story. But if somebody at CBS told Scott Pelley to lie in his story, I need to see the proof of that.
Yeah. And I absolutely, and you don't just say that without being prepared to say that.
He better have proof.
Right.
I need to see
and
it.
And I believe him 100%. And again, this boils down to trust.
Yes.
And again, you can argue all you want about leftist media and how media portrays, leans one way or the other. I'm sorry. Scott Pelley has had a long and distinguished career as a reporter. And if you're asking me to trust him or the other powers that be that I really don't trust, they've given me no reason to trust them. I'm trusting the journalist in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you don't make a statement like that and not have the evidence.
Right. That's right. So it's interesting that he was already fired. So you made the statement, but now, unless he's saving it for a book, which I don't know about, and I really hope he's not, because right now, Scott Pelley, you need to tell us what falsehoods they told you to inject, because if that's true, in my opinion, it will be the demise of CBS News. I would never watch them again, ever. I would never trust them. I would unsubscribe from all of the newsletters. They would have lost all credibility in my mind, and I would encourage every other American or every other viewer to do the same if what he is saying is true.
Here's the problem with that, though, is that no matter what it is, just as with anything else in our world now, anytime we think, well, as long as you, like, this will be the evidence where everybody will agree on this and this will be clear cut. This is, I know for a fact, this is going to be cases where even if he has examples or even video or recordings of what he has claimed to have happened, there will be no agreement. And one side will say, well, you know, no, that's just, they were just doing their job and doing that reporting. And others will say, no, that's a clear example of them trying to push a narrative. Mm. Or we no longer as a society can look at something and agree that, oh, that's the truth. And even if like 70% of us agree that's the truth, I don't think we can ever get there again. So no matter what it is, there's going to be, it's going to be spun that it's just not believable. And there'll be a certain amount of the percentage of people, whether it's for ideological reasons or whatever, that just say, oh, that's not what he says it is. That's just a different style of management, or that's somebody trying to incorporate needed balance in a story.
And I look forward to seeing the example so I can make my decision on that.
Scott Pelley did speak up. Here's more from 1010 Winds in New York City.
In a statement, Pelley accused Paramount Skydance of casting the legendary show aside to curry a moment of favor with the Trump administration. He wrote that, quote, incompetence and unprofessionalism in the new management have wreaked havoc, and said they've even instructed him to, quote, inject falsehoods and bias into a politically sensitive story. Pelley said he either ignored the order or refused it outright. He expressed gratitude for those he's worked with over the years and concluded with, quote, I pray for a day when those people and their ideals are honored again, a day when sanity, competence, and courage return.
In other news, excitement is building for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. The United States is hosting 78 matches during the largest tournament in history, which features a total of 104 games played across 16 host cities in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Here's more on security from KYW in Philadelphia.
Federal, state, and city law enforcement leaders say they're working together to keep the World Cup games in Philadelphia safe. Details from KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Lowe.
It's an often repeated maxim that Philadelphia knows how to stage large events, but State Police Major Richard D'Ambrosio says this summer creates challenges the city has never seen.
It's almost like the Super Bowl, only we're having six of them over a total of 18 days.
D'Ambrosio says that's why planning has been years in the making and highly collaborative, with the FBI and Homeland Security providing intelligence and technology to augment what Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel calls one of the largest deployments ever.
There's a lot of intelligence. There's a lot of movies and K-9. And we're also getting good support from our counties through our mutual aid agreements.
He says more than 3,000 officers will be on duty on the 4th of July guarding the stadium, Fan Fest on Lemon Hill, the concert and fireworks on the parkway, and other activities as well.
This is going to be a phenomenal year. It is going to go well because of the collaboration and the work we do together.
So, that's happening this summer. And you know what else happens in summer? Mosquitoes happen. They're everywhere as the weather warms. And Google is bringing even more. Here's Tommy Tucker from WWL in New Orleans.
One thing I remember from high school specifically, it's weird how some things stick with you, is that, man, when I learned about ecosystems, once you start fooling around with a little bit of this, you better be careful, because there could be a lot of that unintended on the other end. Aaron Ashberg joins us now, assistant professor of urban peri-urban entomology at LSU. Talk about this Google plan to release 32 million mosquitoes in California and Florida. Tell people, if you would, first, what it is that they plan to do, and because you could probably explain it better than I could.
Yeah, so this is not a novel approach from the standpoint that it has been proposed before. Essentially, the idea is they're going to take male mosquitoes. Remember, female mosquitoes are the ones that do the biting.
So oh, really?
They're going to take. Yeah, so it is somewhat selective in the what the process is.
Seriously, so whenever you get a mosquito bite, it's a female that's done that?
That is correct.
Wow. Okay.
The males, they feed on nectar and pollen. They even look a little bit different than the females. They got these big feathery antennae.
No kidding.
Yeah. So
the Dickens, you say.
That's the plan.
All right.
Focus on the males.
Okay.
And the idea is you take these males and they're going to expose them to a bacterium called Wolbachia. Now, this is somewhat interesting in that if an infected mosquito or some organisms that are infected with this bacteria, if they mate with a female, a conspecific, they will sterilize those eggs. The bacterium itself sterilizes the eggs. And so when that female goes and lays those eggs, they're actually not viable.
So when we hear about standing water, et cetera, I'm not advising people, let me clear this up, not to take care of standing water, but in the event that that would happen, the eggs that were laid would never hatch?
Yes, but there is a caveat to this. There is only a specific mosquito that they are targeting for this release. Mm-hmm. There are multiple mosquito species that bite us. They are just focusing on one species, the southern brown house mosquito, that spreads West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. So there still will be other mosquitoes potentially in the area, just not the disease vectors of concern if this project were to work.
So you still have to take all the precautions. This would just, in one way, help to mitigate even more mosquitoes hatching.
That's correct. And even more so, it's the ones that we're really concerned about from a disease spreading standpoint. So West Nile virus, that's our big mosquito-borne disease in the U.S. And the southern house mosquito, that is what they vector primarily. They vector other diseases, but that's our main concern with that mosquito species. And even in Louisiana, we had a pretty bad year for West Nile virus last year. So even though the project is intended for California, for Florida, you know, there is broader applicability to these techniques if they were to be validated.
Do we have those mosquitoes that Google is targeting with this proposed mosquito release here in our area?
So we do have the species, yes. The Culex quincufasciitis, that's the scientific name. It is a southern house mosquito. They prefer humans and birds. They are a container breeder, so they typically breed in containers with standing water.
Mm-hmm.
And they're oftentimes nearby houses. They're, as the name would indicate, they tend to be by humans. And that, of course, increases the transition potential of this species.
Do you have any concerns about unintended consequences of this, or is it all good?
Yeah, that's a great question. We really don't know what the potential consequences of removing a mosquito species on a large scale from a population. Mosquitoes do provide food to a lot of organisms, whether they be birds, reptiles, you know, amphibians, fish, other insects. So we don't particularly know what the potential impacts would be from that standpoint. But what I would say is it's likely that we wouldn't eliminate the mosquito species in general, that southern house mosquito. We would probably reduce their populations in general. And then there's always this phenomenon where the insects kind of backfill from the surrounding areas. You know, we encounter that oftentimes with, for example, fire ants.
Hmm. So do you think they get approval for this or not?
That's a good question. They've used this in Florida in certain capacities. They've used it in other countries before. I think that they would probably get approval on a small scale to see how it works. And then perhaps, depending on what they find from these releases, that they might approve more.
Mosquitoes can be deadly via the diseases they carry, but they're also an annoyance. You know what else is an annoyance? Leaving something behind in your Uber rideshare. Here's more from 1010 Winds.
Dentures, live butterflies, and a wedding gown. Uber is out with its 10th annual Lost and Found Index, but this year the actual items got the museum treatment with a pop-up exhibit down at the Oculus.
You know the feeling. One thing on your mind, getting to your destination. You hop out, close the door, and realize, I left something behind.
Galaxy Buds.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the case for it.
I hardly ever lose anything.
Nice. I've only ever lost a phone in an Uber.
Yeah, not the best feeling, but Uber keeps tabs and has made their lost and found a thing for 10 years, especially the unique ones, Emmanuel says.
I think if people just left cash, that would be gone.
Instead, there's live goldfish, tacos, and a calculator. Yes, that was together. Even breathalyzers, Ivana says.
I think people are fascinating more than we give them credit for, and I think that drivers are excited about the little moments.
Can't imagine the driver's thoughts after finding a toilet plunger, though. Amanda Alexander, 1010 Winds.
Looking ahead to our next story. If you left something in an Uber there, you'd probably get a call. Because everybody knows everybody. And yet, no one wants to run for office.
Another race to watch around here, the one for mayor of Bayville, Long Island, where in this town of about 7,000, there are no candidates. That's right. Zero.
This longtime resident says he's scratching his head trying to figure out why no one is running for the mayor of Bayville. Why do you think no one wants to run for mayor here?
I have no idea. It's weird.
And this man says, yeah, he could be mayor. And he has a lot of ideas, including giving the beach strip a facelift.
Walls Wharf, which is the premier restaurant on the North Shore. Schulze's is new. And it's very, very dependably good food there.
You'd be a good mayor. You're giving all the highlights. Another says if he becomes mayor, he would have to do something about the traffic. Sophia Hall, 1010 Winds on 92.3 FM on Long Island.
Well, it could be that the job comes with only a $5,000 stipend. As for what happens now, the mayor will be chosen by write-in ballot. The vote is June 16th.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.